the Spanish got in first. They hit the American continent before any other European power, and they did so in epic fashion, overwhelming the native empires of the Aztecs, the Incas, and the Mayas. By 1550, the Spanish crown controlled the best bits of the Americas after one of the most spectacular land grabs in history. Spain's American empire proved immensely profitable. Its silver mines generated around a fifth of the Spanish monarchy's annual income, and this helped finance Spain's wars in Europe to expand its domains and roll back the Protestant Reformation. Many English Puritans hated Spain the way Cold War Americans loathed the Soviet Union, as a predatory superpower and an evil empire. This is the story of how the Spanish tried to get their hands on North America as well, and of how they were beaten back by the French and the British. During the first half of the 16th century, Spanish explorers probed the Florida Keys, the Mississippi Valley, the Great Plains, and the Gulf of California. But top priority was consolidating New Spain, a vast province covering present-day Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. Then, early in 1565, news reached Madrid that French Protestants had established a settlement in what is now northern Florida, menacing the route of treasure fleets back to Spain. King Philip II commissioned Pedro Menendez, a trusted officer, to mount an expedition to conquer the Florida Peninsula. Menendez was a fast mover. By the autumn of 1565, he'd founded his first town, San Agustin, and he'd done so with fanatical ruthlessness. The French Protestants had offered to surrender if he would spare their lives, but as Menendez reported to the king,
"I answered they might give up their arms and place themselves at my mercy, that I should deal with them as our Lord should command me. They came over and laid down their arms, and I caused their hands to be tied behind them and put them to the knife."
Convinced that the Protestants were followers of Satan, Menendez told the king,
"It seemed to me that to chastise them in this way would serve God, our Lord, as well as your majesty, and that we should thus be left more free from this wicked sect to plant the gospel in these parts and to enlighten the natives and bring them to allegiance to your majesty."
Within a few years, Menendez had established garrisons all around the coasts of Florida. He'd also sent out expeditions further west in search of silver, and others north up the Atlantic coast, hoping to extend Spain's economic tentacles all the way to the fishing grounds of Newfoundland. This was an ambitious project, which could have changed the course of American history. But no silver was found, the royal subsidies dried up, and Menendez's grand design crumbled even before he died in 1574. Then, in 1586, came something worse than the French. Here's the plaintive report sent to Madrid by Menendez's successor as governor of Florida.
"I do not know where to begin to relate the hardship and misery which had befallen this land. On the 6th of June, Francis Drake arrived at this port with 42 sail. At dawn on the 7th, he landed 500 men. With 80 men I had in the fort, I resisted him until nearly midday. In view of my resistance, he sent to the ships for reinforcement and 4 pieces of artillery. I retired as best I could to protect my women and children, more than 200 persons. The enemy took and sacked the town and burned the church with its images and crosses, and cut down the fruit trees, which were numerous and good. He burned the fort and carried off the artillery and munitions and food supplies. We are left with the clothes we stood in and in the open country."
Drake's assault was only a raid, but it prompted the Spanish to retreat from northern Florida. Instead, they tried to extend their empire into the great interior of North America. This royal commission was given to Don Juan de Oñate, an aristocrat in his late 40s who'd married the granddaughter of Hernán Cortés, fabled conqueror of the Aztecs. Oñate talked big, promising,
New walls, new, peaceful and grand, to His Majesty, greater than the good Marquis Cortes gave to him. I shall note only the great wealth which the mines have begun to reveal, the certainty of the proximity of the South Sea, whose trade with Peru, New Spain and China is not to be depreciated.
In 1598, Oñate and some 500 followers marched up the Rio Grande River from the Gulf of Mexico and staked out a new Spanish province called New Mexico. But the Indians fought back. The most defiant of them lived in the Pueblo of Acoma, which you can still visit today west of Albuquerque, perched on a sheer-sided sandstone plateau 350 feet above the surrounding desert. When a group of Spaniards reached the top and demanded supplies, several of them were killed, including Oñate's nephew, and their bodies thrown down the cliff. According to Oñate's report, the leader of this ill-fated expedition
said that the pueblo was so impregnable that the Indians living in it and those who might seek refuge there could defend themselves and escape punishment for their misdeeds. The captain is sure that if the pueblo is not leveled and its inhabitants punished, there will be no security in all of New Mexico, nor could it be settled, as the natives of the pueblos are watching what we do at Acoma and whether we punish them.
So in January 1599, Oñate decided to make an example of Acoma in order to terrify the locals into cooperating. He could spare only 70 soldiers, hardly enough in view of Acoma's superb defensive position. But the Spanish mounted a small, faint attack from the north, while most of their troops scaled the plateau from the south, carrying muskets and a few cannon. According to the testimony of one of the Spanish officers, the Indians finally surrendered and were imprisoned in one of the biggest adobe houses. But then they
entrenched themselves so that no Spaniard dared go down into it, and a large number of Indians escaped. In view of this fact, the Sargento Mayor ordered the fighting continued without quarter. So it was done, and they set fire to houses and provisions, and killed many of the natives. Then the Sargento Mayor ordered this devastation stopped and asked us to apprehend all of those whom we could find. About 70 warriors, 300 women, and some children were seized.
The survivors were tried under Spanish law and the verdicts were handed down by Oñate himself.
The males who are over 25 years of age, I sentence to have one foot cut off and to 20 years of personal servitude. The males between the ages of 12 and 25, and the women over 12 years of age, I sentence likewise to 20 years of personal servitude. Two Indians from the province of Moqui, who were present at the Pueblo of Acoma, and who fought and were apprehended, I sentence to have their right hand cut off, and to be set free in order that they may convey to their land the news of this punishment.
A savage lesson, and it worked. Acoma lay desolate for half a century. Now the Spanish started to impose their ways on the natives. Franciscan friars built Catholic missions in the main pueblos and introduced crops such as apples and wheat. The Indians decided it was prudent to work with the newcomers, but they kept up their own religion in private. The Spanish, for their part, adopted many Indian practices, such as growing maize, wearing moccasins, and using folk medicines. And because there was so little migration from Europe, the Spanish often took Indian wives, creating a mixed population known as mestizos. But in British America, as we'll see, intermarriage was much less common, and the line between colonists and natives much starker. Spain's hold on the borderlands was always tenuous. During the 1670s, New Mexico was ravaged by drought and frequent raids by hostile Indians. As the people of the pueblos starved, they questioned the potency of the Franciscans and openly reverted to traditional religion. In the words of one Spanish report, the Indians
were saying that now God and Santa Maria were dead, and that their own god, whom they obeyed, had never died.
In 1680, protest exploded into open revolt, and the small Spanish communities in New Mexico were easily overwhelmed. Only the main town, Santa Fe, offered real resistance. But after 2 days of fierce fighting between Spaniards and Indians, the remaining Spaniards were holed up in the governor's palace. As the governor reported later,
"Finding myself with the church and the villa burned, and with the few horses, sheep, goats and cattle which we had, without feed or water for so long that many had already died, and with such a multitude of people, most of them children and women, about 1,000 persons, perishing with thirst, I determined to take the resolution of going out in the morning to fight with the enemy until dying or conquering. On coming out of the entrance to the street, it was seen that there was a great number of Indians. They were attacked in force, and though they resisted the first charge bravely, finally they were put to flight."
A dramatic breakout, but it proved merely a tactical success. Santa Fe had become untenable, and the governor had to evacuate all the Spanish community. It took Spain 16 years to recover control of New Mexico. Meanwhile, on the East Coast, the Spanish made another effort in Florida, building new mission towns. But now the local Indians were backed by the English from their new colony of South Carolina. Together they raided Florida, butchering the Spanish and enslaving many of the mission Indians. By 1706, only St. Augustine and a few surrounding villages survived. Worst of all, Spain's other rival, the French, had begun settling the rich delta lands of the Mississippi, in between Spain's struggling far-flung colonies of Florida and New Mexico. The Spanish created a new province, Texas, into which they sent groups of settlers and missionaries who founded towns like San Antonio. But this couldn't alter the fact that the French had gained control of the estuary of the great Mississippi River. Spanish North America remained a series of isolated outposts rather than one great kingdom. Today, the Hispanic imprint on the USA is still evident in many ways. You can see it in places and buildings from St. Augustine and San Antonio to Santa Fe and Los Angeles. You recall it every time you pull out a banknote, because the US dollar took its name from the old Spanish currency. And you savour it in so-called Mexican restaurants all over the United States. In recent decades, the massive flow of migrants from Latin America is another reminder that the dynamic of American development has not flowed simply from the East Coast westward. Today, Latinos make up a larger percentage of the US population than African Americans. And so, although Spain's North American empire didn't survive, its legacies for the modern United States have endured.